Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. Remember, we're also live on Facebook. That's DW Africa. These are some of the stories we've lined up for you. Gunfire and smoke rock Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, near police and army headquarters. A correspondent, tell us what's happened.
Well, we learned from eyewitnesses that around 10 a.m., a car with gunmen arrived at the military headquarters in Ouagadougou. Afterwards, an explosion was heard and gunshots.
It is a developing story, and we'll always bring you the latest as it develops. Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi has requested countries attending a security meeting in Kampala and have contributed peacekeeping troops to his country not to rush with pulling them out because the security situation remains precarious. Let's hear from an official from the African Union who was at the meeting.
We need the forces that are required. We need the force enablers and force multipliers so that this work is done properly.
We will also be hearing about how the European Union has warned US President Donald Trump should he go ahead and slap tariffs on imported steel and aluminium.
These are just some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but here's a chance to listen to what's happening around the world.
My name is Jean Nyinge with DW News. We start off in Burkina Faso, where at least 28 people have been killed in the capital, Ouagadougou, in an armed attack targeting the French embassy and the country's military headquarters. According to the latest information, 7 among the dead are security officials and 8 attackers. The French government has called it a terrorist attack. This is how one of the eyewitnesses described the situation.
There were a lot of shots fired, damage everywhere. 2 policemen went by near the army headquarters. There was a car with around 4 to 6 people. They fired. There was an explosion. We saw a lot of shots fired and a lot of smoke, and then people started running.
Now to Nigeria, and 3 aid workers have been killed by suspected Boko Haram fighters in the remote town of Ran in Borno State. A UN spokesperson, Samantha Newport, said 3 workers were injured during the attack and a female nurse was reported missing. There are fears she could have been abducted. After months of uncertainty, British Prime Minister Theresa May has laid out her roadmap in Brexit in a major speech in London. It included her vision of what trade between Britain and the European Union should look like once Britain leaves the bloc. She stressed that any deal must respect the referendum.
As we leave the European Union, we will forge a bold new positive role for ourselves in the world, and we will make Britain a country that works not for a privileged few, but for every one of us. First, the agreement we reach with the EU must respect the referendum. It was a vote to take control of our borders, laws and money, and a vote for wider change. But it was not a vote for a distant relationship with our neighbours.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Israeli police have questioned Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his wife as part of their ongoing corruption investigation. The two are suspected of taking bribes from the owner of the country's largest communication company in exchange for favors. Along with the 2 other corruption cases in which Netanyahu is suspected of bribery, the probes pose a serious threat to his political survival. Let's now head to Italy, and the campaign period came to an end on Friday ahead of general elections on Sunday. The campaign has been dominated by concerns about immigration. According to the final polls, a coalition led by former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi will win the most votes, partly due to his promises to expel 600,000 immigrants if elected to office. And a fire at a drug abuse treatment center in the Azerbaijani capital Baku has killed at least 25 people. Officials are working to determine the cause of the blaze. For more news and information, please visit our website, dw.com, or our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jane Nyingi.
You're still listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Eunice Onjiro.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We begin the program today in Burkina Faso, where authorities say an armed attack is underway in at least two locations in the capital, Ouagadougou. Government officials say security forces have killed several militants after they opened fire this morning near the army headquarters and French embassy. Soldiers and special forces have encircled the buildings and are combing the area for suspects. French officials say the embassy is no longer in danger and their reports the gunfire has largely ceased. DW's Adrian Krish in neighboring Nigeria in the capital Lagos has the latest.
Well, we learned from eyewitnesses that around 10 a.m., a car with gunmen arrived at the military headquarters in Ouagadougou. Afterwards, an explosion was heard and gunshots started. But apparently, the military headquarters was not the only target by the gunmen. Later on, also the French embassy was attacked that is about 2 kilometers away from the military headquarters. The French ambassador to the Sahel region already said that this was a terrorist attack. Also, the police chief of the country went one step further. He actually said they're treating the case as a suspected Islamist terror attack. And the government of Burkina Faso has so far confirmed that 4 of the attackers were killed.
Okay, 4 of the attackers were killed. We're just getting an update now that says 7 security forces have been confirmed dead. Adrian, do we know who was behind this attack?
Well, a lot of people here believe that Islamist terrorists are behind it because Burkina Faso has seen a rise of Islamistic terror attacks in the past 2 years. Last year, there was an attack in Ouagadougou on a restaurant. 19 people were killed. 2 years ago, there was an attack on a hotel in Ouagadougou. 30 people were killed, including many foreigners. And it's important to know that Burkina Faso used to be a stable and peaceful place in a very volatile region for a long time. But in 2014, there came instability, political instability to the country because the longtime ruler of the country, Compaoré, was chased out of office after almost 30 years in power by protesters. Afterwards, the political situation became not stable anymore. There was an attempted coup d'etat that failed, and this political instability was also taken advantage of by terrorists.
DW's Adrian Krish following events in Burkina Faso, speaking to our colleague Ebi Kutadasan. And Eunice, this story is developing really fast. At least now 30 people have been killed, according to new reports coming in. 30 people in total have been killed in the capital of Burkina Faso, Ouagadougou. And many people are commenting on this story, Eunice, on our Facebook page.
Yes, that's actually quite a lot of people. Well, we have some comments here from Ngo Divine Ngo. He's saying, it's sad, but alas, the sins of history always have a way of going after its perpetrators. This Islamist got a foothold in the region, thanks to the long-standing dictatorships that France helped put in place.
Yes, Sophia Heritage says the French are beginning to pay for their numerous crimes in Africa. This is just the beginning. By the time many African youth would be sensitized about the genocide in Africa, I mean, the former colonizers will regret their policies on the continent.
And Kenneth Ofori is saying France is cooking something. France want to deeply control the French African colonies now. French is cooking things up. They will send more military men there.
Yeah, keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and engage yourselves on what you think can be done in Burkina Faso to avert the situation. One comment from Saikila Melani says, without supporting the attacks on the French embassy, I think it's time for France to quit this continent.
And here one comment from Bazia Alex Zambakari saying, so sorry, these Islamist militants have become a problem to the world.
And of course, another comment coming in here from Moga Joseph Eluzai says, Africa stands with the gallant people of Burkina Faso. I like that. No enemy can tamper with the fortitude of Sankara's Abode. It is the land of the upright. We appreciate for those comments that you've sent it. Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Now, elsewhere in the world, the European Union has said it will react firmly and commensurately to defend its interests following US President Donald Trump's decision to slap tariffs on imported steel and aluminium. The United States President Donald Trump's planned tariffs on steel and aluminium have been met with massive outrage and have sparked concerns that the measure will distort trade, cost jobs, and ultimately lead to a tit-for-tat trade war. Solomon Shodende has more.
After weeks of speculation, Donald Trump followed through on his campaign pledge to protect American industries from unfair global trade practices as he announced Steve new tariffs of 25% on steel imports and 10% on aluminium. The trade measure, due to come into force next week, was greeted with fury by key U.S. trading allies such as the EU, Australia, Canada and Mexico. European Commission Deputy Chief Spokesperson Alexander Winterstein made a bloc's position clear this Friday.
We strongly regret this step, which appears to represent a blatant intervention to protect U.S. domestic industry and not to be based on any national security justification. Protectionism cannot be the answer to our common problem in the steel sector. Instead of providing a solution, this move can only aggravate matters. The EU has been a close security ally of the US for decades. We will not sit idly while our industry is hit with unfair measures that put thousands of European jobs.
Australian Minister for Trade, Tourism and Investment, Stephen Kiobo, has expressed his disappointment at US President Trump's announcement. According to him, such imposition would distort trade and ultimately lead to loss of jobs.
This announcement is disappointing. It's an announcement that would indicate the imposition of a tariff of 25% on imports of steel into the United States and 10% on the imports of aluminium into the United States. An imposition of a tariff like this will do nothing other than distort trade and ultimately, we believe, will lead to a loss of jobs.
Trump has long threatened to impose tariffs on steel and aluminium, accusing other countries of dumping and deploying unfair trade practices. Business stakeholders, however, said U.S. risk retaliation from major trade partners.
Solomon Shodende.
Let's head to Uganda's capital, Kampala, where a meeting on security in Somalia has been taking place. Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi requested countries with troops in his countries not to rush with the withdrawal process. Uganda has troops in Mogadishu and other parts of the conflict-ridden country and that have often come under attacks from Al-Shabaab Islamists. The meeting also comes at a time when attacks are on the rise in Somalia. This Friday alone, at least 11 people were killed in separate Al-Shabaab attacks. From Kampala, Alicita sent this report that is now read by Fred Mavonyi.
President Mohamed Abdullahi's plea came after meeting between the AMISOM commanders and ministers of foreign affairs, where they discussed possible early withdrawal of their troops as the UN Security Council had directed. The UN had asked the foreign countries to be withdrawn in phases by 2020. Uganda's foreign affairs minister Sam Kutesa attended the meeting.
Following the deliberations, the summit recalled UN Security Council resolution whose main thrust was the phased reduction and drawdown of AMISOM troops by 2020, and observed that the timeframes and troop levels under UN Security Council resolution are not realistic and would lead to a reversal of the gains made by AMISOM.
Sam Kutesa warned that the withdrawal of foreign forces could affect Somalia and the region's security if not well managed.
The drawdown of AMISOM is synchronized with the corresponding strengthening of Somali security forces. The failure to carefully manage this process could imperil the political and security gains already made.
Francisco Madeira from the African Union Commission says the countries in the region should work together, eliminating the Al-Shabaab terrorists before thinking about withdrawing the forces.
We need to be able to effectively contain, disrupt, and destroy Al-Shabaab. For that, we need the forces that are required. We need the force enablers and force multipliers so that this work is done properly.
The mission has seen the AMISOM forces regain at least 80% of the territory that was previously under the control of Al-Shabaab.
That report was filed by Alex Gita and read by Fred Mavonyi.
Yes, Isaac, now to take us back to our top story, which we're talking about Burkina Faso and the attack that happened there, there are still comments which are coming in
yes.
And also live on our Facebook page.
And Popola Fatima says, in Africa, we are our enemy because of selfish interest. Leaders have to do more. I think that's what she means for security to be realized as well.
And Yahya Hamis is saying security of Africa should not come from foreign countries.
Yeah, we like it when you keep on debating amongst yourselves, especially on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Keep those comments flowing and we'll always read them whenever we can, live here on air. Welcome back to the program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Njiro. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, a court in Zimbabwe orders the government and the police to compensate farmers that were evicted by former First Lady Grace Mugabe in 2007.
We are living in misery, as you can see. We are living in plastic shacks. We can't build. They leak if it is raining. We have to stand in one corner as our blankets get wet.
And of course, just to remind you, every Friday we treat you to another dose of sports, the Bundesliga. So remember, don't go away, stay with us. There is much more to come.
But first, a court in Zimbabwe has ordered the government and the head of police to compensate villagers that were evicted from their land. The police are accused of using excessive force to evict the villagers. They will have to pay more than $30,000 for the damages and distress caused to the farmers. The evictions took place just as the country experienced record rains and while the villagers still had crops in the field. This was in 2015.
Exactly.
Police tied ropes around those houses and used lorries to pull them down to ensure irreparable destruction. From Harare, Columbus Mavunga reports.
Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, which represented the farmers, said the Thursday ruling was likely to open floodgates. Here is Kumbrai Mafunda, the spokesman for the rights group.
We hope that by the end of this March, all the judgments would have been delivered, and we expect the cited authorities to pay the damages as indicated by the court.
Why did you decide to take up this case?
I think Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights' motivation in taking up this case was to do with elements to do with challenging impunity so that these actions are not repeated, so that other actors also are deterred from doing such injustice.
But Edmund Zou Farm in Mazowe District, about 50 kilometers north of Harare, the farmers are not as triumphant as the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights official Mafunda. They welcome the judgment in their favor, but the damage has already been done, says one of them, 59-year-old Chenai Muchererwa, who looks after her six grandchildren.
We are living in misery, as you can see. We are living in plastic shacks. We can't build. They leak if it is raining. We have to stand in one corner as our blankets get wet. We fear for our health. We need urgent assistance. Now that the courts have ordered us to be compensated, it is a relief because I, as a widow, I can now rebuild. I had nowhere to start from after my husband died 3 years ago.
Her neighbor, 43-year-old Takaite Shigayo, says for her misery of living without proper shelter, she has no problem with ousted President Robert Mugabe, but the wife.
Grace Mugabe is the one who was causing havoc here. She wanted this place. When police came, they were clear that they had been sent by her. Clearly, it wasn't a legal eviction. Otherwise, the government would have used the proper channels to evict us. It was her who wanted this place, and there was nothing we could do.
During her days as First Lady, Grace Mugabe would challenge anyone in public, including the then Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa, whom she referred to as, quote, an employee, unquote, of her husband. Now it seems, as the adage goes, tables have turned. Her allies are now paying back. Besides the 30,000 compensation, Mugabe's allies are being picked up for various offences such as corruption. This coming Monday, Levinya Gura, the Vice Chancellor of University of Zimbabwe, is in court to answer allegations of awarding a dodgy PhD degree to former First Lady Grace Mugabe.
Columbus Mavunga with that report. Now, Isaac, there's a question we posted on our Facebook page and on our social media. Is this a new era in Zimbabwe? And we have some comments which came in.
Yeah, definitely. It's amazing how people are reacting to the posts that we put up there on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Evan Christopher says, it's not enough, though encouraging. They need to bring the people involved to account, including the so-called Grace Mugabe. That woman spent short time in government, but her human rights violations and brutality, nobody should be above the law.
Mm-hmm. And Na Christine from Cameroon says, great decision by the court. I think if things continue like this, Zimbabwe shall experience rapid growth in a short time. Kudos to the new leadership.
Dickie says, good move. I hope she, meaning former First Lady Grace Mugabe, oh, they used to refer to her as the Gucci Grace.
Yes.
He says, I hope she'll be prosecuted.
And Jay from the US is saying, where were the judges before? They need to lose their jobs if they had worked under Mugabe.
This is a story, Eunice, that, you know, will elicit, you know, many comments depending on which angle you see it. But most of them are happy that most of the comments we're getting on our Facebook page, people are glad that at least these villagers will get some form or sort of compensation.
Yes,
yeah.
I also think that the villagers themselves, they are happy. I mean, from the report we've heard, they are happy. Yeah. I mean, the damage was done, but it's a good thing that they get this compensation.
Yeah, their lawyer says, you know, they're looking forward to that date when this judgment will be put in place, $30,000. And you can keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page. Do you think actually the $30,000 is enough for the distress and the damage caused to these villagers? Keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. There is still much more to come, and we'll be back right after this.
DW African Roots.
Yes, and as you've heard, it's time for African Roots. From farmer to war leader, that is Ya Nana Asantewaa's remarkable life in a nutshell. At the beginning of the 20th century, she stood up against the British colonialists in what is today Ghana. Nearly a century after her death, she is still celebrated in Ghana and Africa as a whole for being an exceptionally courageous and strong-willed woman. This report by Abdu Pinado is now presented by Wanjiko Mwaura.
It was not just a stool, but the golden stool, the most sacred object in Ashanti culture that the British colonizers wanted to claim for themselves. Ya Nana Asantewaa was the only one ready to fight for it. She was born in 1840 in Ejisu, which is now Ghana, and was part of the Ashanti Empire back then. Ya Asantewaa got married early and had one child, a daughter. Dr. Wilhelmina Donko, a historian and president of the Garden City University, Ghana, describes Ya Asantewaa's humble beginnings.
She started life as an ordinary woman. She was a farmer who was cultivating granites and onions, other foodstuffs and so on.
Ya Asantewaa's life changed decisively when her parents died. Her brother Kwasi Afrane became the leader of Ejisu and named her Queen Mother. However, Kwasi Afrane died shortly thereafter in 1894. When the new leader, one of Ya Asantewaa's 10 grandchildren, was exiled by the British 2 years later, Ya Asantewaa became regent in Ejisu to represent him. This position afforded her the opportunity to be among the chiefs that were invited to meet the British representative in 1900. At the gathering, the British representative, Sir Hedrick Mitchell Hodgson, requested that the golden stool be given to him to sit on. The golden stool was the most sacred object in the Ashanti culture, and it was not meant for sitting. The war which broke out is now known as the War of the Golden Stool and also as Ya Asantewaa War. Dr. Wilhelmina Donko explains.
Ya Asantewaa teaches us that we should be prepared to stand for what we believe in, whether it was her lineage that she was concerned about. At least she was prepared to stand up and be counted to fight for them.
Ya Asantewaa did not only initiate the war, she also played an active role. She was 60 at the time, and there is evidence of her visiting the war fronts, inspiring the soldiers and supplying weapons. The war only subsided after her daughter was captured, forcing her to surrender. The British took Ya Asantewaa to Seychelles in the Indian Ocean, where she died in October 1921. Daniel Baker Glover is a Ghanaian filmmaker and a political commentator. He describes Asantewaa as a woman who inspired the struggle of independence in Ghana.
She was saying to the people of Ashanti and indirectly to Ghanaians and Africans that this is our land. Nobody from overseas should come and dictate to us how we should live. And of course, by taking up the mantle of a war leader, she was telling women that you are equal to men.
This, of course, is also still an important message today to carry on Ya Asantewaa's heritage. One of the best female secondary schools in Ghana is named after her.
That report is part of African Roots, a project realized in cooperation with the Gelda Henke Foundation, and hopefully you enjoyed it.
Now, as usual at this time on Friday, we head to sports. We'll be looking at the Bundesliga. Bayern Munich is at the top with 60 points, followed by Borussia Dortmund, which has 41 points. Well, this is a good sign, or a sign that shows that FC Bayern Munich could secure the title by March. Before we came on air, I caught up with Chuck Penfold from DW Sport Desk, and I wanted to hear from him what he thinks could make this league more competitive.
It's interesting you ask this question because my colleague Matt Ford is just working on a story that by the time you hear this may be up on the page to look at a bunch of different scenarios. People are all, you know, talking about this recently. How can you make the Bundesliga more competitive? I mean, it is competitive, just not at the top. My personal view is that there's nothing you can do. Basically, all the other teams have to get their act together and they have to raise themselves up to a Bayern's level. You can't punish a team for being that good. So in past years, we've often had teams like Borussia Dortmund, 10 years ago, a little more than 10 years ago, Werder Bremen. Teams have been able to raise their level to challenge Bayern, even win the title, but nobody's been able to do it in a really sustainable way. But I really do believe it's up to these other teams to raise their level up to Bayern's.
It must be boring for Bayern. How do they feel being the top? Are they competing against themselves, or do they feel like they have competitors?
You know, I guess so. I mean, pretty much the last few years, it's been a given that they're going to win the Bundesliga and maybe the cup, the German Cup as well. Their real title they've sort of been longing for the last few years is the Champions League. That's the real thing they're after. And they've missed that. I guess the last time was 2013. You know, Carlo Ancelotti was brought in specifically to try to win the Champions League, which Pep Guardiola had failed to do. Now Jupp Heynckes is back. The last guy that won the Champions League with Bayern did the triple, in fact, Champions League, DFB Pokal as a German Cup, and the Bundesliga. So I think that's what they're really shooting for. Obviously, right now in the Bundesliga, nobody can touch them.
Now, RB Leipzig will face Dortmund tomorrow on match day 25. What are both teams fighting for?
Yeah, I think that's the big game of the way of this weekend. Leipzig are sixth on the table. They're in a battle to stay in the European places. That would qualify them for the Europa League. But last year, of course, they finished second in the league, got to the Champions League. They definitely want to do that again. It's not out of the question because they're just 3 points behind Dortmund, who are currently in second. As we said, you know, Bayern away, you know, on their own up top. But it's really quite tight in, you know, sort of second to even seventh place. So both teams are really playing for the Champions League. Dortmund, you know, they're only one point ahead of Schalke. So it's really about Europe and hopefully getting in the Champions League for both teams.
I was speaking to Chuck Penfold of DW's Sports Desk.
And for Bundesliga lovers, of course, remember to visit our page, dw.com/sports. You'll get all the collected results of the Bundesliga fixtures. Now, a story we posted on our Facebook page, Nigeria's government said it had extended the search for 110 schoolgirls abducted last month to neighboring countries. And we asked you, are there any chances to find the girls?
Yes, we did. And we had some comments coming in. Okechukwu Bernard Franklin is saying, it's an irony that in a volatile region prone to attacks and ravaged with insurgency, which should have heavy presence of security agents, Boko Haram yet managed to kidnap and move 110 schoolgirls without encountering either military or police.
And he goes on to say, whereas in the east, peace reigns, yet you can't move longer than 1 kilometer without encountering military or police checkpoints in the north. Okay, well said, Okechukwu. Ibrahim says, all these measures put in place come a bit late. This should have been done on the same day the girls were kidnapped. Many thanks for those comments. And on behalf of the production crew behind there, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
Bye for now.
Wishing you a lovely weekend.